Welcome to the Townships at 12. I'm your host, Maureen Dillon Teasdale, so I invite you to join me for the next hour here on theCUBE 88.9 FM here in the Townships. Today, I will be interviewing Dr. Kashif Prasada in the first half hour. Dr. Prasada is affiliated with the organization Mass for Canada. I will also have some announcements for community events coming up, and of course, some music. In the second half hour today, I will be interviewing Rachel Garber. Rachel is the editor of the Township Sun. So let's start the show with some music.
When the world is knocking you around, almost broken and you're barely breathing, taking punches, don't you dare go down. I know it's hard, but don't you stop believing. Stuck in motion. When you're hurting, you can count on me. If you're going through hell, keep going.
You're listening to the Townships at 12 with your host, me, Maureen. And that was a song from Jonathan Roy. The song is called Taking on the Rest of the World. Next up, it's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Kashif Prasada. Dr. Prasada is with the organization, the grassroots organization called Mass for Canada. So welcome, Dr. Prasada. Could you tell us about your organization, Mass for Canada?
The organization founded in 2020 that pushed for the early mask mandates at the start of the pandemic. And it basically was, I think, instrumental in helping control the early waves of COVID before the vaccines were available.
Now, what is your mandate for Mass for Canada?
So in the early part of the pandemic, there was a lot of, I should emphasize, the organization is mostly inactive now. In the early part of the pandemic, there wasn't much of a consensus on how to control COVID initially. And I think there was adoption of measures that we thought that worked well in Asia, especially in South Korea, Japan. Mask wearing was an important factor in how they got through the pandemic wave, especially without even doing lockdown. So it's something we pushed for, and then municipal mask mandates were enacted about a month after we started our campaign.
Okay. Now, do you feel like the pandemic is over, or do you think it's still going on?
Well, I think the most acute phase is over, like the especially the devastating waves in 2021, which killed a lot of Canadians. It's still ongoing, unfortunately, and it's still stressing hospitals significantly, especially in the wake of the Christmas holiday. So it's still ongoing. There's roughly four waves a year of the illness, and it hasn't settled down into a seasonal pattern, unfortunately.
Okay. Do you see an end to it eventually?
Eventually, I don't know, honestly. I don't think anybody knows if it will settle down. We thought, honestly, I was one of the people who believed that, you know, two vaccines and that the whole thing would be over, that the virus keeps evolving and trying to overcome our defenses. And the whole reason why hospitals are overwhelmed now is that somehow, you know, the vaccines that we got and the natural immunity we've developed hasn't been enough to stop these waves from especially affecting young children and people over 60, 65.
Okay. Are there any particular provinces right now that are harder hit by COVID?
I think the provinces with the worst hospital infrastructure. So always to mind, like this is where I trained in Quebec. So Montreal hospitals have always been stressed. Like I trained at the Jewish General and Montreal General. Mm-hmm. And I think it just hits them harder because they have such low capacity and there's also no primary care available for a lot of people. Manitoba also comes to mind. And, you know, they've had, you know, multiple deaths in their waiting rooms recently and in the past. So I think those two places are hit the worst. Alberta as well, where there's been some hesitancy in the provincial government to allow hospitals to have staff wear masks. I'll tell you, in my hospital, and in most of the GTA, masks are required in clinical areas. And so that helps prevent spread between patients who are waiting in the waiting room and from staff. And it also keeps our staff working because we don't get sick at work as often. So.
Okay. Are you based in Ontario?
I'm based on here in Toronto.
Toronto. Okay. Do you see many people wearing masks or has it become pretty much something of the past?
Well, in my hospital, I would say 90-95% of people are wearing them. But out in and outside of clinical setting, I hardly see it. Maybe 1 out of 100, maybe more in shopping mall. Maybe more in grocery stores where we see seniors wearing them mostly. I think it's you know, we're far from the most acute phase of the pandemic when there's no vaccine and there's no treatment. Now I think a more sustainable way, especially given the controversy and the culture wars around masks, is I think people should not be afraid of wearing them in crowded indoor settings, like a subway, car, a crowded bus, a plane full of people who are coughing, even a crowded mall. Like I think especially when hospitals are being stressed, that should be something that should be encouraged.
Okay. Now, masks do make a difference from your research?
Yeah, definitely. Like, there is some controversy because of some of the some flawed meta-analyses that have been released that show they didn't work, but they included studies that were pre-COVID and they were fairly inconsistent what they included. But I'll tell you, I was a medical student in Toronto during SARS-1 in 2003, and that masked how we stopped that disease. And SARS-2, COVID-19, is very closely related to that. So we wore, in the hospitals, N95 masks for 6 months. Until the disease was completely gone and it worked. So that's when I knew that this would be effective. In the world now, there's a lot of good science to show that high quality masks, especially N95 grade masks, can stop or slow the spread in especially medical settings or in other crowded settings.
So masks do work, and a good quality mask is important, and putting it on properly also, I would imagine.
Exactly. But, you know, even just one of the ear loop masks that you can buy, like one of the KN95s, that's still a great mask if there's a good fit. Like, we can't let perfect be the enemy of good here.
Okay. Just out of interest, have you had COVID?
Personally, no. Somehow, no. I have no idea how. I see 200, 300 patients a week. But I wear an N95, and I have, you can probably hear the filter right next to me. Like, we have filters in the clinic where I work, we have filters in every room, in the waiting room, and in the hospital is supremely well ventilated as well. I haven't caught it so far, but several family members have, and we've been able to delay them getting it up until in the last year when there was therapies available like antivirals. So thankfully, the damage has been limited in my immediate family, but at least two of us, like two of my siblings have had long-term symptoms after COVID, and which are hopefully getting better now.
Okay, what about long-term symptoms? Let's talk about that, about how much of the population ends up with long-term COVID.
So I think the numbers are all over the place. I think what I'm seeing generally is especially older people, and especially middle-aged to older women, there seems to be a greater prevalence of long-term symptoms. These could be a variety of things. So very common is to have loss of taste and smell for months. The other one is severe fatigue and what we call post-exertional malaise. So after you exercise or go for a run or a walk, or even going to do normal activity, you can feel extremely tired. And that can last weeks, months, even permanently for some people. Another common one is heart or lung issues. So breathing difficulties, heart palpitations, even permanent heart problems. And there's a whole number of other symptoms. Those are the main syndromes that I've seen in patients. And generally, I would peg it at 5 to 10%. And more likely if you're not up to date on your boosters or if you just take antiviral. But generally, I would say 5 to 10%.
Okay, and a lot of people affected are older women. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. And then the more severe your infection, like the more, you know, let's say if you have COVID and some very mild cold, like you barely notice it or you're asymptomatic, mm-hmm. chances of you developing long-term symptoms are a lot less. But if you get the more severe infection that puts you in bed for a week or 2 weeks, your chances of getting long-term symptoms are higher after that.
Okay, that's interesting. What about the aerosol component?
So, yeah, definitely like just like SARS-1 before it, SARS-2 is, I think, definitely proven to spread the aerosol. So that means it can linger in the air in a room, in a very poorly ventilated room. Other viruses like that are called measles, which is also airborne. So this is a lesson that we learned the hard way with SARS-1. SARS-1, people, you know, we washed our hands, we wore masks, but then there was a huge super spreading event at one of our hospitals in Toronto, and then that's when we brought strict airborne precautions, and that controlled the spread of that virus and basically ended the threat in Toronto in 2003. In 2020, when COVID-19 started spreading, there was some hesitancy to recognize it that way, maybe because it was expensive to implement a lot of these airborne precautions. Maybe there's a shortage of N95 masks. I don't know. There's a lot of politics related to this issue. But the fact is, if you're in a room with someone who has COVID at the end of the room and they're coughing their guts out, there's a very good chance you'll be exposed to it. And if you develop it, will depend on if you had a mask on or if how good your immunity is and how good your body is at fighting it off.
Okay. Do you find that most people have been vaccinated for COVID, or is that number going down about vaccinations?
I think in the initial campaign, I think something like 90% of Canadians got the first two shots, and then roughly 40-50% got the third shot. And the newest booster, I think the numbers are pretty low. I think about 20%. It's very low in my home province of Ontario at around 13%, fairly high in BC at around 20-25%. So variable across the country, but it's unfortunate that the uptake has been very low.
Okay, that is unfortunate because you feel that it does make a difference if people are vaccinated and have their boosters?
I think so, and especially in older folks, like anyone above 60, getting the COVID and the flu vaccine is a no-brainer. In my shifts, I admit people almost every day with COVID and flu symptoms. And those could have been prevented with the booster vaccine. When I asked them, have you been vaccinated? Yes, I got the two shots, you know, 2 years ago. But by now, the immunity has probably waned. The virus has changed a lot. So there's a lot out there that your body may not be able to handle. Some people do get... some people have good immunity from the first two shots or whatever infection they've picked up since then, but a lot of people don't, and those are the ones that end up in our hospital.
Do you have any statistics for Quebec?
So I think for Quebec, a lot of the issues are the state of the healthcare system is always so poor, especially emergency room capacity and the lack of primary care. And also the hospitals are older. When I remember working in old hospital like the Royal Victoria, which is now closed, but other hospitals, the ventilation is not as good, and I don't know if there's been an emphasis on improving access to good ventilation in those hospitals. So I think what I would say is that a mask mandate in hospitals for staff and visitors and for patients is a great idea. HEPA filters in the patient room and in hallways in the older buildings is extremely recommended. We in Ontario have upgraded all of our hospitals since SARS to be very well ventilated. So you don't have as many outbreaks on wards in Ontario as much as you used to. And I think overall, Quebecers should not be afraid of wearing a mask in public in crowded areas where there's high risk, like going to the grocery store on a crowded day, going into the metro, going into the bus. You know, the fact is, you and your family will face those consequences alone because the hospital may not be there for you. You may not be able to access care, and you can prevent that with simple things like mask wearing at the right time.
Okay, so being vaccinated, wearing a good quality mask like an N95 should protect us.
And paying attention to the ventilation in your workplace. Like if you're in an older building that hasn't been upgraded, you can use sometimes CO2 monitors are helpful to see if your school or workplace has good ventilation. The CO2 is like carbon dioxide. If you have a lot of people in a room where the air is not being cycled, it builds up. If you're in a room where the HVAC system can cycle the air, then it comes down. So you can use that. And yeah, paying attention to that stuff, lowering the number of times you get sick in general is generally good. So basically, yeah, masks, good ventilation, keeping up to date on boosters, that's the best you could do.
Okay, do you find that people are still working from home or most have gone back to the workplace?
I think a lot of places have done hybrid. The smarter workplaces, I find, will have good policies on, you know, don't come to work if you're sick, don't infect the whole workplace, stay home, you know, let's switch to virtual when the weather's bad, like there's a big snowstorm. So I think the best workplaces have switched to some sort of hybrid where they can go back and forth if they need to. And I think employers should not be afraid of shifting to hybrid or to work from home when there's big waves of illness like we're experiencing right now.
Okay, that's great. Anything else you'd like to add? You said that your website is basically inactive, but people can still go there?
The website's there. The group is mostly inactive because, you know, the main crisis is past. It's just ongoing work. We are working on setting up a permanent group to address COVID, long COVID issues as well, which we're going to announce hopefully in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. Can we give people the address for your website? They can still go there and get some information?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And we also have a Twitter account where a lot of our posts are archived as well. It's basically Mask for Canada on Twitter.
Okay, Mask for Canada. Okay, and that's a 4, M-A-S-K-S, and the number 4 for Canada.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, great. Anything else you'd like to add before we go?
No, that's great. Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Oh, well, thanks so much. Thanks so much for your time and all the best with your research and your website. Thanks again. And now for some community events here on the Townships at 12. We have a Valentine high tea at Colby Curtis Museum coming up, and that's a great way to celebrate Valentine's Day. The tea will be on February 11th. Now you have a choice of times here. It's from 10 a.m. to 12 noon or 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. $40 per person, and allergy-friendly options are available, so that's great. You need to RSVP by February 5th. The email is info@colbycurtis.ca. Also, a delicious brunch coming up at The Hut, the ANAF Unit 318, located at 300 St. Francis Street in Lennoxville. This will happen on Sunday, January 21st from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Come and enjoy eggs, pancakes, bacon, sausages, ham, potatoes, baked beans, and much more. And also coming up at the Sunnyside Elementary School, there's a fundraiser. The Sunnyside Parents Participation Organization, they are currently accepting donations for their upcoming annual bingo. The items will be used as prizes for the bingo winners. Items can be dropped off at Sunnyside Elementary School, 441 Dufferin Street in Stanstead, or you can contact the PPO at sunnysideppo@gmail.com to arrange a pickup. The bingo will be held in the Sunnyside Gymnasium on Saturday, February 17th. Doors are open at 12 noon and games will start at 1 p.m. A concession stand will be available on-site with refreshments available for purchase. And the Hugs campaign still going on. The Mental Health History invites everyone to keep a person experiencing homelessness warm this winter. It goes on until March. The Hugs campaign accepts donations of new hats, underwear, gloves, socks, scarves, and other warm articles of clothing. And the greatest need for warm, comfortable, larger, neutral items of clothing, particularly for men. Toiletries are also welcome, for instance, toothbrushes, hairbrushes, deodorant, anything like that. Items can be dropped off directly at their offices and the beige bins next to door number 2 at 3355 College Street in Lennoxville, or you can simply write a check and let them do the shopping for you. And please write Hugs in the memo line. You can also call to schedule an in-person drop-off of items or checks. Please make checks payable to Mental Health Estuary and, as I said, indicate Hugs on the memo line. And they would like to thank everybody. For more information, 819-565-3777 or email projects@mentalhealthestuary.com. And if you belong to a community organization, a nonprofit organization, and you have an event coming up, please send us an email describing the event in as few words as possible, cjmqnews@yahoo.ca or cjmqnews@gmail.com. And also, if you belong to a community organization you'd like to have an interview, please contact me at these same email addresses.
You are not a listening. Oh,
that That was Green Dollars with a song called Listening. You're listening to the Townships at 12 with your host, me, Maureen. And that's the end of the first half hour here on the Townships at 12. I want to give a big thank you to Dr. Kashif Perzada for the interview today. Very informative. We'll go out with a song called Sign of the Times. It's by Vision V, Philo, Nathan Nicholson. And stay tuned. We'll have a word from a few of our sponsors and the news with Derek Bullard, and I'll be back with the second half of the Townships at 12 for today.
Be my protection and your possession, Lord.